The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I'm not sure what there is to say after those two chapters of the Shishogi. That kind of said it all, didn't it? This is our transfer of merit ceremony Sunday, and we do different things, but what we did this morning was recite chapters 4 and 5 of the Shishogi and sing the dedication of merit and the adoration of the Buddha's relics. So I think we're in pretty good shape. I wanted to thank Reverend Master Mayon for inviting me to offer this bit of Dharma, and also to thank you, especially Reverend Master Mayon, for your sympathetic advice this past week, which had a lot to do with what I'm going to try to say to you. So I will start with a little personal anecdote, and I'll try to keep it fairly short. I went through what seems to be now and then a prolonged period of the blahs. That's all I can put it. Although when I looked up the definition of blah in the dictionary, I think it said boredom, and I certainly have never felt bored here. But it did say a general feeling of discomfort and dissatisfaction. I don't know where that happens to any of you, but it seems to happen to me now and then. And then I thought, well, there must be a better word than the blahs. And then I remember the word doldrums. And I thought, you know, you hear people say, oh, going through a period of the doldrums. So I looked that up in the dictionary. And it said, and I had forgotten this, it's been a long time since I studied geography, that actually the doldrums are a region of light winds and calms near the equator. And that the equator, of course, is a great circle of Earth equidistant from the poles. It also said that the doldrums meant down in the dumps, but I didn't really want to apply that to myself. And I thought, well, the next time I feel this way, I'm just going to think about the fact that here I am close to the middle. I'm in a period of light, winds, and calms. But I'm close to the middle, which is where we want to be, you know, the middle way. And I can make a choice about whether I want to go north or south, right? Whether I want to look up or look down. So I felt that was helpful. It also, I also realized that I really needed to sit still, and I needed to let go of the fear. And I needed to look deeply at what was causing these doldrums, or whatever you want to call it. And as often happens, when I maneuver myself into a position where I don't think there are any answers, and at the same time, I'm willing to just sit still and have faith that the answer will come, and of course it always does. And for me, it comes kind of in the form of a giant bumper sticker in bold letters. Or, I don't really still do this, but you know, you used to have advertising banners at the end of a little, you know, two-engine plane. Kind of, you'd see what it was saying. And so this banner kind of floated across, and it said, the time has come to practice no self. And I was kind of taken aback with that because no self is the basis of all of our teaching. But I have learned over the years to listen to these answers when they come and to look deeply and not accept it at face value. And when I sat with it, it sounds funny now, it didn't seem funny at the time, and I realized a lot of memories came up. The time has come. And one of the memories, I think I must have been about 12, My mother came in and said, "The time has come to clean your room." And I thought, "But it's Saturday, it's Saturday." And so there was that. But then the other memory that came up was a couple years later. I was living in Florida at the time, and I was 14, and my father said, "Probably it'd be a good time for you to learn to drive, right?" And I went, "Yay!" Even though it was Saturday. You know, that was fine. That was fine. So I had all of these mixed feelings triggered by these very old memories. Some of the memories seemed a burden. Who wants to clean their room on Saturday when you're 12? And then exhilarating because, wow, getting to learn to drive. And this was at a time where you kept your window open and you put your arm out, you know, to stop and turn right and turn left, whatever it was. So it was very interesting to me, and I realized that a lot of what we do and a lot of what we say and a lot of what we think are based on memory and habit, right? A new revelation to all of us, right? None of us knew that. And so I decided to just continue sitting with that and to look at really what, and to really look at the question of what is no self? What does no self mean? I mean, that's one of the basic teachings of Buddhism, right? The three marks of existence, impermanence, and change, suffering, and no self. And I thought, well, that's pretty obvious. But there was something niggling under there that was more. And I remembered a talk that Remaster Mayon gave not too long ago on impermanence. And some of the things she said really came up for me again. And I remembered my first teaching on impermanence, although I didn't think of it as impermanence at the time. It was actually 50 years ago. It was 50 years ago last May. And the reason I remember it so well, I was talking to one of our congregation members, and I can't remember how it came up in our conversation, but I remembered what I said to my infant son, who was only a few hours old at the time. And what I said, or what I remembered, was something I had read. And what I had read was, "Our children are not our own." And she immediately beamed and said, "Oh yes, that's Kahil Gibran, the prophet." And I'd totally forgotten that. This was 1967, you know, right in the midst of the Vietnam War. And I was thinking, what would be the worst thing that this child could do? And the worst thing that child could do would be to voluntarily enlist in the military. And then someone handed me this lovely chapter from the prophet on "Our children are not our own. They come from our bodies. They are not our own." So here I am, 50 years later, reading Dogen that said, "Our bodies are not our own." And I thought, gosh, life is a circle, isn't it? You know, it's just, there it is. And so the question is anything our own? Is anything our own? And isn't that what impermanence is all about? Teaching us that this body, this mind, this identity isn't real. In one sense, it's a figment of our imagination, right? It's all the things we've built up. I am this, and I am that, and I'm not this, and I'm not that. And yet, we are here. This body and mind is precious, as Great Master Dogen tells us, because it is through this body and mind and this self, if we want to think about it that way, that we can practice enlightenment. We can offer enlightenment to all beings. So when I think about the practice of no self, I think about it as a journey. This is a journey that started a long time ago, longer than this life, but we can all think about times in our life that possibly drew us to where we are now. In any event, it was comforting for me to think about it as a journey, because I know that journeys go back and forth and they go up and down, and at some point it's going to end as far as this particular body goes. And I don't know how it's going to end. And so it's just really up to me to do the best I can day by day, an hour by hour, minute by minute, sometimes second by second, to do the work of the Buddha, to, in Dogen's term, actualize enlightenment. If we accept the fact that we are Buddha nature, that our heart is compassionate from the very beginning, and that we innately know what it is we need to do to be compassionate people, then all I have to do is pay attention. That's a lot simpler than it turns out to be for me, but I'm working on it. And thinking of understanding no self as a journey, as an ongoing something, I found very helpful. I think it's important to look at the difference when we talk about the practice of no self or the journey of into no self. It's helpful to look at the fact that in Buddhist teaching, there are two selves. There's the self with the lowercase s, the selfish self, and there's the true self, the self that often in our scriptures, in our teachings, in our liturgy, is with a capital S. So when we're talking about the journey into no self, for the moment, I'm going to talk about the selfish self. And I have found that understanding impermanence and looking at impermanence as a friend has been really helpful in this regard. So what are the other things that came up for me as some of the insights when I'm looking into no self? Well, one is generosity. And of course, we talked about that a lot this morning when we were reading the Shishogi. And one of the things that came up was that giving is an obvious way of expressing our generosity. But what about receiving? Isn't receiving a form of generosity? Cahil Gibran in The Prophet says that we are all receivers. But don't some of you find that receiving help is a little difficult? How often do we say, oh no, I can do that by myself. Oh no, thank you, I'm taking care of that. And yet, that's a form of generosity for ourselves in allowing ourselves to receive and allowing someone else to give. Allowing someone else to give. This is what Cahil Gibran says. Someone said, speak to us of giving. And the answer came, you give but little when you give of your possessions. It is when you give of yourself that you truly give. And isn't that what Buddhist training is all about? In a recent talk, Reverend Master Mugo talked about faith in the Bodhisattva path. Certainly this morning in the Shishogi, we've talked a lot about the bodhisattva way of putting others before ourselves. Is that not the giving that we want to do? And it doesn't mean that we don't make, if we're able, monetary contributions, that we don't make offerings of food, but basically we want to give ourselves. So how do you give yourself with a capital S? How do you give your true self if the little selfish self is still clinging there saying, I don't have time to do this. I don't have time to do this. Somebody else can do this. No, no, everything is fine, etc. So we have to pay great attention to all of our actions, to every single thing that we do, and ask ourselves, am I giving as much as I can of whatever I have at the moment? And am I willing to receive whatever offerings are given to me? Another thing that came up for me was that we're very blessed as Buddhists because Buddhism gives us an undivided life. I think that all of us long for our life to be whole, to be one and undivided, not split into all these little parts. We want to knowingly or not dedicate ourselves to something greater than what we see ourselves to be. And I think that that certainly is why, or one of the reasons, that I came to Buddhism or was attracted to it way back when I was 19, so that's a number of kalpas ago. Seems like it. And I think that's why a lot of us come, because Buddhism isn't something that we can read in a book and put on our bookshelf. It isn't something that we practice on Saturdays or Sundays or Fridays. It's every single day. I think we seek Buddhism because it's demanding. It doesn't let us off the hook. And I thought again, when I was reading the prophet, I actually looked in the prophet to find that poem that I had remembered from way those 50 years ago. And I found that nice thing on giving. And then I thought, well, I wonder what he has to say about religion. So this is what a couple sentences that I read and thought, gee, that's very nice. I won't read you the whole poem. They're several pages long. He said, your daily life is your temple and your religion. And whenever you enter into it, take with you your all. So give it everything we've got. Take everything to put into our daily life. Because, back to impermanence, tomorrow may not come. Am I going to put off saying thank you? Am I going to put off writing that thank you note? Am I going to put off sweeping the cloister? What if I die overnight? You know, somebody else can sweep the cloister, but no one else can say thank you from me. No one else can write that thank you note from me. No one else can make that apology for my anger or my short-temperedness. So we put our all into our daily life. And of course, when you talk about daily life, you can't talk about daily life without talking about the precepts, because the precepts are the daily life of the Buddha. And it seems to me that the precepts can be, if we let them, a real guideline for an undivided life. The other book that has been quite influential for me over the past few weeks has been Invoking Reality by the late John Dado Laurie. I believe it's Mountains and Rivers Order, New York, I think. And This is what he had, and he talks about practicing the precepts as practicing no self. And here's the way he puts it. He says, the precepts are a definition of the life of a Buddha, of how a Buddha functions in the world. The precepts are how enlightened beings live their lives, how they relate to other human beings, how they make moral and ethical decisions, how they manifest wisdom and compassion in everyday life. The precepts provide a way to see how the moral and ethical teachings in Buddhism can come to life in the workplace, in relationships, in government, in business, and in ecology. That's everything. So the precepts are everywhere, and the precepts are our guide to an undivided life where there is only the true self. He also says, all the precepts are nothing other than the life of no self. To practice them is to practice the life of no self. They are specifically designed to work in the world of differences and potential conflicts, in the world of this and that, but they arise from no self. So this was actually new to me, to think of the precepts as a vehicle for taming, if you will, the selfish self and allowing the true self to arise. So then the question is, these are some ways to look at the practice of no self. And what I need to look at, and the question I need to ask, is what is my practice of no self? That's the question that I can answer for me, but I can't answer it for you, because you have to ask yourself, what is my practice of no self? But I'll give you some tips that have come up for me, and they may be useful or they may not. One is making offerings. And I owe this to Reverend Master Mahon. We all make offerings in many, many ways, but the offering that we want to make is the offering of total dedication and commitment to our practice. You know, I'm reminded of something that Reverend Master Daizui either said or wrote, that when he came to Shasta, he was a psychologist who was a Buddhist. But after a while, he realized he was a Buddhist who was a psychologist. And I obviously have never forgotten that. And it's been very helpful to me all these years. And the offering that we make is being a Buddhist. The other things, being a nurse, a doctor, a counselor, a contractor, whatever it is, these are all secondary. This is the way, for some of us, we earn our living, we support our family, etc., etc. But really, the offering that we make is being Buddhist, because out of being Buddhist comes our practice of the precepts, our practice of the Eightfold Path, and aren't these the things that guide our life? So we have to think about, I'm a Buddhist, and I'm whatever else. So making offerings of ourselves, making offerings of what we have learned as Buddhist, is what's crucial in our journey into no self. We also need to Take responsibility. You know, Reverend Master Jiyu would say, and I think it's probably written down somewhere in Roar 2, that Buddhism is for spiritual adults. We have to take responsibility for what we do, and we have to take responsibility for our karma. I'll refer to John Dato Laurie again as far as karma goes, and offer this. Karma is about body, mouth, and thought. It is karma that creates who we are, how we live our lives, and how we relate to each other, and how we relate to ourselves. It's that simple and that important. When we can acknowledge our own karma and we can say, I have a choice. I can continue what I'm doing, or I can change. And we can ask for help, and we can have faith that we can make that change. That's how we deal with our karma in our minute by minute everyday life. I think one of the offerings that we make is generosity and gratitude, giving and receiving. For me, another offering is patience. Not only is it an offering, it's a full-time learning experience. I often think that I've heard that the Buddha was reputed to have said patience is the highest virtue. And I thought, well, I don't have to worry about being too virtuous anyway, because I'm certainly still working on that. Being patient with ourselves and being patient with others. Looking at our language of body, speech, and mind. Language has a lot to do with what we convey to other people and what we convey to ourselves. And I've realized that I could do a lot better. I'm doing fairly well in my language to other people. I don't do so well in my language to myself, and I'm working on that. I was also, again from Invoking Reality, intrigued with what Dato Laurie had to say about the language of the body. The language of the body. Let me read you what he has to say. Body language speaks outwardly and inwardly. Outwardly and inwardly. When you clench your fist and grit your teeth, you create anger mentally and physically. When you place your hands in the cosmic mudra, in other words, the mudra that we use when we sit in meditation, you create a state of consciousness that reflects introspection and peace. What we do with our bodies is who we are. It is for that reason that the posture of Zazen is so important. And it's one of the reasons why Reverend Master Jiyu talks so much about taking our meditation off of our cushion into our daily life. I can't tell you how many times in my life, both on the phone and in person, I put my hands in gassho, and it has saved me from innumerable angry replies or anger inside. So I think our body language is important. I think that we need to look at what is going to help us in our journey into no self. And in closing, I would say, I would offer these last little comments. Being willing to go to the place where we're stuck. no matter how uncomfortable that is, to be willing to go to that place where we're stuck and sit there right smack dab in the middle. Because I think most of us are aware of those shortcomings that we have, those bits of karma that we haven't taken care of, but it is so easy, at least for me, to become distracted, to become busy, to just put them aside and I'll deal with them later, thank you very much. No, we have to do it right now. We have to go to the place where we're stuck and sit still. We have to also, secondly, take responsibility for our own suffering. You know, I can't tell you how long it took me after I came to the monastery to stop saying and then thinking, you make me so angry. And it finally got through, you are not what's making me angry. I am what's making me angry. My karma is what's making me angry. My expectations of how things should be, why isn't this done the way I want it to be, that's what's making me angry, not anybody else. So our karma is not out there. Our karma is in here. It's in the same place, believe it or not, it's in the same place as that innate heart of compassion. It's in the same place as our Buddha nature. And it is longing to be cleansed. It is longing to have us say, thank you for being there. Thank you for showing me what I need to do. And this is what I'm going to do. So when we talk about generosity, we can also be generous to our karma. And we can say, thank you. Because here's an opportunity to not give. Here's an opportunity to not give that karma to the next rebirth, but to take care of it ourselves with love and respect and determination. I think we need, in our journey to know self, to look at time, to look deeply at how we use our minutes and hours and days. Am I truly using my time in a way that will benefit self and other? I think along with that, we need to look at what we fill our minds with. What we fill our minds with. How much time am I spending looking at the news? How much time am I spending listening to something that doesn't benefit me or others? Another thing that's been helpful for me in dealing with all this is the comfort zone. There have been at least two very nice articles in recent journals on the comfort zone and moving out of the comfort zone. And I think we all have a personal comfort zone that's individual for each of us. We can't exist comfortably if we're going to truly let go of ourselves, because it's going to be uncomfortable. And once we realize that it's okay to be uncomfortable, I don't have to be warm and snuggly and cozy all the time. We can just accept that this is part of Buddhist practice. And I think another thing for me that helps is the realization that, yes, I really can put others foremost. You know, in Shantideva's Way of the Bodhisattva, he has this nice verse. I didn't bring it with me to recite the whole thing. To exchange self for others. As long as space, this is as much as I remember of it, as long as space abides, so too may I abide to alleviate the suffering of the world, to exchange self with others. It's not something that we can understand in our heads. It's something that you have to sit with and understand in your heart. But a good beginning to exchanging self for others is to put others foremost. And Great Master Dogen talks about that, this in the Shishogi. Isn't that the Bodhisattva path? Being willing to put someone else's welfare ahead of our own. And the final thing that I'd like to say about the journey into no self is I think of it both as a journey into no self, and I think about it as the practice of no self. And when I think about the term practice, I want to make it clear this is not a rehearsal. This is not a rehearsal. Practice is our everyday life. It's practicing, it's putting into practice, it's doing, and that practice is both commitment and action, and it's a dedication to fulfilling our vow to help all beings. We want to bring enlightenment into our own life, and we want to bring enlightenment into the life we share with all beings. So it seemed to me that making the sacred and the mundane no different one from the other is what the journey into no self is. We practice no self in order that we may truly know the true self, the real self, for the benefit of all beings, including this particular being that we think of as me. So I wish you well in your journey into no self. Thank you very much. Thank you. Homage to all the Buddhas, homage to all the Dharmas, homage to all the Sanghas.